You're in Los Angeles.
But there was this gang of 10-year-olds with guns.
Exactly. You're in L.A.
But everyone is driving around in cars, shooting at each other.
That's L.A. for you.
But the air is green and there's no sign of civilization whatsoever.
He just won't stop with the social commentary.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 84 for the week of August 24th, 2015. I am shambling bum-to-bum 405 traffic, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Coffee Brain and Tea Leaf franchisee Sarah D. Bunting.
Beans.
Cannibal Locavore Tara Ariano.
Kale.
And Undead Rider Omar Gallega.
It's death out here.
Riot! Welcome, everybody, to episode 84 of Extra Hot Great. I think that's maybe the third or fourth time I've used that Futurama clip for something to do with L.A. in the intro. Definitely not the first time.
Yeah.
Boy, I love that clip. All right, so just to start us off, some quick site business, just based on some emails I've got recently. First of all, we've got a bunch of new people, I think, coming in, listening. And one person just said, can y'all just get a quick overview of, like, the history of the show and what's going on? Because, you know, obviously any podcast that's been around long enough has a lot of inside terminology and jokes and stuff like that. And that kind of stuff you're just going to have to pick up as we go along. Although there is a lexicon on the site for some of the stuff. If you go to Previously TV and hit EHG, there's something called the lexicon where you can find out about what certain things we talk about mean, such as through methods or the Pierce and stuff like that. But just to give you a lay of the land, Previously TV is the site that this
Previously.tv, so people know where to find it.
Thank you. That this podcast belongs to. This is not the only podcast we do. We do a Beverly Hills podcast called Again With This. We do
Beverly
Hollywood
Hills 90210.
Oh my God.
Well,
really?
There are lots of really shows that have Beverly Hills in their name. They might think we mean Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Oh, good. As if.
Jesus.
Soldier on, Dave.
Dick.
All right.
Someone is.
All right, this podcast was is run by me, Tara Ariano, and Sarah D. Bunting. We are the founders of Previously.tv. Previously to Previously.tv, we were the founders of Television Without Pity, and a bunch of other sites like Fame Tracker, Hissy Fit, Tomato Nation. And this is the second version of the podcast. We did one before we had the site with Joe Reed, and then Joe went and got a job and stuff and left. And when we did the Previously TV, Sarah stepped in. So if you hear us talk about EHG Mark One, that's the podcast that preceded this one. Same kind of format, except we also did movies. All right. So the other piece of news, anything else about this?
Wasn't someone saying that they didn't know who we were to each other?
Oh, yeah. Somebody thought me and Tara were brother and sister until they figured out we were married. So that's gross.
It's also confusing because Sarah D. Bunting also has a brother whose name is Dave. So if you couldn't tell the two lady voices apart and she made a reference to her brother Dave, yeah, that might have been the confuser.
Right.
Perhaps.
And the other part that I wanted to clear up was somebody was complaining to me last week that we spoiled the latest Mr. Robot episode for them, and this is our policy. We put all the segment subjects in the show notes with times, so if we're talking about something you haven't watched, you can skip it. That's on you. You need to be proactive and make sure that you are not going to spoil yourself by listening to our podcast. We are not your spoil nannies in that regard. What we do do, what we do do is if we are talking about a spoiler for a show that is not the subject of the segment, we have spoiler audio bookends, and they sound like this. So I'd go, all right, well, we're going to talk about some Walking Dead spoilers. Spoilers, aho, fun ahoy. And we'll talk about that spoiler, and then at the end of it, you'll hear. Now the Walking Dead spoiler's at an end. Yay, you didn't know, and you will continue to be in the dark. All right, and that is so if you're scrubbing your audio in your podcast, you'll probably hear those two tunes, so you'll realize when the spoiler is over. All right, that is it for site business. Now you're all cut up. Let's talk about Fear the Walking Dead with one Mr. Omar. Hello, Omar.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us. You are a zombie expert. You cover Walking Dead and now Fear the Walking Dead.
You also cover Strain, The Strain, which is zombie adjacent.
It is, yeah. So
yeah, I have no problem with gore in all the gore shows.
So before we get into the pilot that that aired last night, let's talk about the title, Fear the Walking Dead. Terrible title. Terrible.
I've heard people call it Fear of the Walking Dead. Like, no one seems to be able to get the title straight.
Mm. Yeah, and it's like the shows give you a directive. Oh, you're going to be so scared, guys. Okay. Fear the Walking Dead, guys. Yeah, it doesn't roll off the tongue. It doesn't group the shows alphabetically, which is a problem for me.
I see. Okay. So you would prefer if it was The Walking Dead, colon, Fear?
The Walking Dead, colon, Fear.
Exclamation point.
comma, Fear of.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's not the best.
What would you have called it instead?
I don't know, The Walking Dead LA. I haven't really thought about it, but
that doesn't really bring in the prequel aspect. I mean, I think I get where they're going with Fear the Walking Dead. It's, you know, brings in the dread aspect of like something's coming, you don't know what it is.
Yeah. I guess. So that brings in my first question is this. How fearful are we going to be being so ahead of all the characters in this show?
That is my biggest problem with the show, is that you know everything that's going to happen, at least maybe not to these characters, but you know the larger picture of how things are going to fall apart and how bad it's going to get for everybody. So when, you know, a character is hunched over and you think they look like a zombie and they turn around and it's just the principal smiling, it's like, okay, all right. You know, I know what you're trying to do there. So there's a lot of fake scares in the first episode where, you know, they're hinting that it's a zombie, but it's really not. It's just some guy wandering around in the park, you know. There's just a lot of that, and I think that's kind of off-putting, because if you've been watching The Walking Dead for 5 seasons, you're way ahead of all these characters, and you're just impatient for stuff to kind of get on with it.
And I get the feeling that this show is trying to be more of an Outbreak, you know, the movie kind of series, or at least that in the first season. And that has its own creepiness to it. But if you're selling this as a zombie prequel, you know, it's hard to get that tension in there when you know, well, these are the zombies. Generally, this is how they come to life, and we know their threat level, right? We know that there's kind of, you know, the slow shambling kind, and it just seems like you're so far ahead of the characters that you're just like, let's fast forward a year and see what's happened to LA. I mean, that's where I am in the pilot, because the pilot didn't have any of that sort of end of civilization stuff going on. Like, I feel like the pilot, in order to be really impactful, either need to give you a taste of that or sort of do a fast forward or something. It was just sort of like slow and meandering and didn't really work to get me excited.
They seem determined in not only in the two shows, but also even in the video games and the comics, to not explain the origin of what happened. They seem really determined not to explain it on any kind of scientific level.
Yeah.
And the whole Outbreak thing you're talking about, it's usually we're following a medical expert or a CDC person through these kinds of stories. Even on The Strain, I mean, the main character is a CDC guy,
right,
and he kind of figures it out, at least a way to kind of fight it on a virus level. With this show, I mean, you've got teachers, you know, dealing with the virus, and I don't know if they're like the best perspective on this global pandemic.
Sarah, you were excited to watch this one, even though you're not a regular Walking Dead person. What did you think of the pilot?
I agree with everything that's been said so far. I do think, generally speaking, it's kind of a smart move not to directly address the origin of the disease.
Agreed.
Because then it can't be nitpicked.
Yeah.
With that said, I also think it's actually smart to make sort of your central characters in this one teachers, because then you have a natural overlap with teenagers. And here's the question that I was just talking about this yesterday with the aforementioned Joe Reed and occasional EHG guest Jesse Murray. And we were saying that we were interested in how social media played a role in the beginning of the outbreak, like before society collapsed, and why it wasn't more effective at allowing society to stop its own, like, implosion. So the mention of MySpace in the pilot was not super encouraging to me.
Yeah, because as Omar pointed out in his post, like, well, this isn't a poor, it's definitely post iPhone, because we see someone using an iPhone or watching a video on it. So it's at least 2007.
I saw a 30-pin connector, so it's.
Yeah.
So it's at least three,
they're
4 years.
They're trying.
But MySpace was not really a thing even by 2007. It was pretty much over.
That might have just been my joke. I don't know if that was actually mentioned.
Oh, was it not?
I think that was just a joke I was making about the social media stuff.
I see.
But yeah, I mean, you have the one character who, you know, thinks he knows what's going on based on what he's seen online, but they're pretty nonspecific about, like, where online he saw it.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I was sort of only half paying attention by that point, because once again, a show falls into the trap of, like, let's build all these characters and this family and make you care about them, and I'm like, this Nick kid. I don't know.
Yeah. Before we get off the social media track, as it were, one of the reasons why it probably didn't work is because everybody's being a smartass and creating hilarious memes out of all the rumors. You know, like, they're doing their own, like, like zombie movies, you know, or like zombie celebrities, and they all, you know, Kim Zombkashian or whatever.
Good one, Dave.
Yeah, thanks. High five.
Right. No, I see what you're saying, but I still feel our conclusion over glasses of white wine, so take that for what it's worth, is that it would have been like one major metropolitan center would have gone under, but then all the others would have learned from it. And it wouldn't be this, like, the entire country slash world. I don't know if this, I assume it's a global thing.
Yeah.
In The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. No?
Well, we don't know anything beyond, like, just what they've seen in, like, Georgia, D.C.
Well, and right, how would they know? Right. Good point. Yeah. But yeah, that I feel like the rest of the country slash world would then have time to figure out how to, you know, even if they can't exactly contain it. Well, yeah, contain it, save themselves.
Right.
The infrastructure.
In movies, Britain's always the one, is always the last holdout, because, you know, they're a powerful island nation.
Right.
So in your Children's of Menses, in your, you know, 28 Days as Laters and stuff like that, you know, when they have a chance to, you know, raise the border, they do. And that's always the one that, so I feel like it could have happened, but I get the feeling that it is global, even though they don't, you know, obviously they do a good job of, you know, introducing the fog of war, as it were, for the participants. You know, they don't know what's going on outside of, you know, how far they can see. But
yeah,
as of the first
episode,
UN dropped a dome over the entire 48 guys, contiguous. So we're like, good luck,
guys. Come on,
don't do it, Sarah.
sorry, spoiler.
It's hard to say, because sometimes social media is useful and sometimes it's a spreader of misinformation, as we saw in the aftermath of, for example, the Boston bombing, where people were coming up with all kinds of crazy theories, none of which really panned out, as I recall.
Kim Braindashian.
Okay.
Nope.
Yeah. Dashing your brains.
Oh, okay. I see what you're doing. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Okay. I'll allow it.
That's a thinker.
It seemed like they were trying to evoke that thing. Remember where the there were some attacks with, like, people high on bath salts that were, like, attacking police and biting them? It seemed like they were trying to evoke that with the video that they were showing.
Yeah, totally. That's a good point. But it also, but, you know, when you, another recent example is, like, the Ebola outbreak that came to the U.S. and sort of.
Yeah.
And it was, like, hysterical news coverage of it for days and days. So I take Sarah's point that it was, like, if something like this were happening, it would be a much bigger deal, even just on a panic level, in 24-hour news world.
Omar asked me to clip this, and it's like the one, it's the kid who was listening to social media. Do you want to play that now? And who had it figured out.
So why the knife?
Kid brought a knife to school.
Hey, I could expel you just for crossing the threshold with that thing.
No, please. Safer in numbers.
Safer from what? Tobias, please don't screw yourself like this. You've been working your ass off. You're on track to go to college.
Yeah, no one's going to college. No one's doing anything they think they are.
What? What are you talking about?
They say it's not connected. They say that, but I don't believe them. It is. For reports in 5 states, they don't know if it's a virus or a microbe. They don't know, but it's spreading.
You need to...
No, people are killing.
You need to spend less time online, okay? If there's a problem, we're going to know about it. The authorities would tell us.
You need to spend more time online.
Yeah.
Figure this shit out.
Yeah, it must be hard to really like introduce dramatic ignorance in the internet age for a TV show. And sometimes this is going to be, well, this character just hates the internet or whatever, because, you know, like, that kid's right. Like, yeah, there's going to be a lot of rumors and people making up their own stupid theories, but the information that people are dying here and here and here and here, nobody knows why, would spread like wildfire. Like,
yeah.
The news runs on that sort of, you know, fuel. Yeah. Can we talk about the teacher character for a second? The mom?
Sure. I think she's a guidance counselor, but yes.
Oh, thank you. What is it about TV characters that walk into a room where there's cops and they just start being nasty and shitty and like combative right away to the cops?
Yeah, those cops seem pretty helpful, actually. They were being really nice to the druggie.
Yeah, the scene, like, her son's in the hospital room. She just walks in and is like, yeah, you arrested him? Well, fuck off!
That's an A-plus Kim Dickens impression, first
thank
of
you.
All.
Yeah. What was she like?
Hey, you guys! First of all, you want some chicken? Second of all, fuck off! For some reason, she's got chicken.
Oh, God.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard the birth of a throat polyp. I am sorry.
The other problem with that scene was the one that you tweeted, Dave, last night, which was, it would be nice if there were a TV show where no one is a drug addict.
Seriously, I'm so sick of it. Oh, my God. Like, yep. Figure out another way to make a character conflicted. Doesn't have to be just an addiction. I'm just so sick of it. And I understand that everybody in Hollywood loves drugs. And liberal Hollywood loves their drugs.
In the Hollywood.
That's what the show should be about.
And they just can't get enough of it. And that's their day-to-day experience. But what about the rest of America, people?
Well, and it's supposed to introduce this aspect of, like, you know, it's unbelievable. And, of course, nobody believes this guy. Like, just skip over all that. Like, get right to them just believing that it's happening and explain to us the aftermath and the consequences. And also, don't block the actor like he's Gilbert Grape. Or Arnie and Gilbert Grape, excuse me. Like, that was some really awkward flapping of the hands. I don't think that actor is actually that bad, but he's got a shitty job.
Oh, here's one thing that The Strain actually does better than this show, which is, you know, very surprising. Or
Wigs?
Because The Strain doesn't do a lot better than any other show. But when stuff happens, like when they're examining the body or they're seeing these freaky, you know, biology things, like they take pictures of it with their phone. They shoot video and show it to other people and go, look at this video of this thing I saw. Mm-hmm. You don't see any of that in this show. And I was surprised even at the end with the whole car thing and they actually see one up close. Like, no one's snapping a picture, no one's taking a video, no one's getting any kind of evidence to show other people what's actually happening.
That's a good point. But that is not the most annoying thing about that scene with the car. Let me paint you a picture in case you haven't seen this. So the family, the guidance counselor mother, the teacher father, and the druggy son, they're in their truck, and they're revisiting a scene where the druggy sort of had a fight and shot his drug-dealing friend, and then, you know, maybe that friend's going to turn into a zombie. He did. They drive down this long L.A. tunnel to the L.A. River, right?
The beautiful L.A.
Where the grease thing was filmed,
yep,
I'm sure.
Absolutely.
The Bellaway, is that what it's called or something?
I don't know. It's the L.A. River. It's what they call it. It's just paved over now. And he stops right at the exit of the tunnel. First of all, blocking anybody else who wanted to drive in the beautiful L.A. River in their
and
truck.
Maybe kill someone.
And then they go look at the car where his friend was shot, and he's not there. Oh, no. And then they decide to leave, and he decides to, and this tunnel looks like it's a mile long, not just pull out, turn around, and drive forward through the tunnel again. No, he's going to back up a mile tunnel. Nobody does that.
That was really dumb.
It was, it made me so angry. It was the dumbest thing about this whole episode. It made me super mad.
You can't even say that it's because they were worried about being spotted. Like, I assume that's why they stopped in the tunnel before pulling the car out, that they didn't want to get seen by, like, a helicopter or something that would be flying over and looking for
But also,
crime scenes.
They were enough out of the entrance that you could have seen them.
Yes, but I mean...
Yes.
But also...
Well, and after one of the times he ran over his drug-dealing zombie friend, he's like, whew, and throws it in park.
Yeah.
Even though his almost bitten parents are like half a mile behind him in the tunnel, and it's clear that hitting this creature with a truck doesn't do a whole lot to stop it. Like, put it back in reverse, back up a half mile, pick up your fucking parents.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. I guess I disliked this more than I thought. But I'm still hopeful. I don't know about you guys.
Well, let's ask Omar, because I know Omar's watched at least, what, second episode?
Yeah, I saw the next one.
All right.
And Omar, we should say, if we didn't up top, Omar will be covering the show all season for us on Previously.tv. Omar.
All six episodes. Short season.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Walking Dead was back in
six
October.
Also.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But I think they're already guaranteed for 16. It's already been renewed for a second season. I think there's going to be 16.
Okay.
So it'll be 16 of those and 16 of original Walking Dead. So 32 weeks of the year.
Right.
You can have zombies.
I mean, you can't really blame them, you know.
Like, oh, no. It's huge.
Hell on Wheels isn't doing that kind of business for them, I have to think.
So the second episode, I think, has more urgency and action. There's fewer stretches where nothing is happening. I think 90 minutes might have been a mistake
for
this first episode. The second episode is shorter. It feels more economical. More stuff happens. They deal with some of the things with the teen character, the junkie character, and what he's going to have to go through because of that. And they also introduce Ruben Blades, who is not. I follow a lot of Latino people on Twitter because I am Latino. See? I'm part of that community, and people were like, "Where's Ruben Blades? He was supposed to be there." So he's not in the first episode. He is in the second episode, and they introduce him and his whole family. But then it gets into this whole area where it starts playing into some Latino stereotypes.
Ooh.
And the original Walking Dead had that episode Vatos in the first season.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yes.
With gangbangers protecting old people. So I'm like, it's kind of a mixed bag, a mixed blessing. I don't know how well they're going to address Latino characters in Los Angeles, which, you know, they're going to have to one way or another. So, but I like Ruben Blades' character in the second episode, and so there's stuff to look forward to. I think if you were bored by the first episode, you thought it dragged or didn't have enough action, I think the second episode ramps up there for sure.
And do you get a sense of whether the show is going to be a zombie show or like a end of civilization disease outbreak show? Is it sort of playing its hand at all?
I think just because of the density of Los Angeles, there's going to have to be a lot of zombies hopefully soon.
Right.
I don't think that the characters are going to be that close to the on a virus level. Like, they're not gonna be investigating the cause of it or anything. They're just gonna be trying to survive, I imagine. So
could you tell in the second episode they're shooting in Vancouver?
Is that what happened?
LA, then they moved to Vancouver.
Oh, LA.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
There's a like a protest scene that feels very doesn't feel at all like it's in Los Angeles.
Well, all the buildings in Vancouver are sort of like white and chrome. Like, that's sort of the aesthetic in downtown Vancouver.
Yeah, Vancouver looks more like Singapore than it does LA, really, in terms of design. But
but it does answer one question I had on a technical level, which is, you know, assuming that the show universe, the zombie outbreak happens and civilization falls on the West Coast, then within a few months, the smog in L.A. is going to clear up. And how are they technically going to shoot that in L.A.? Because it never really lifts except for after a big storm. Mm-hmm. And then you only have like 3 hours of shooting time to actually capture it. But the answer apparently is Vancouver. And I assume a little CGI too. But that was like one of my moments. Like,
yeah.
The smog is man-made, and if there's zombies everywhere, we're finally going to have clear skies. So Sierra Club's like, yeah!
All right, Sarah, what are you hoping for the remaining five big episodes of this season?
More fighting.
Yeah.
More eating. Mm-hmm. And, like, more of a sense of, like, I get that that's one way into the story, is by like following a single family or a couple of families and seeing how they survive or don't. But like, the family dynamics, I feel like, are a little bit cliched here. It's nice to see Cliff Curtis getting something good to do after fucking stupid gang related. That poor man. And, you know, I like Kim Dickens. We'll see what happens, but it needs to be, you know me, needs to be more processy.
Yeah. I said to Dave when this was over, so this looks like it's taking place about 4 days before I kill myself in this reality.
Because
if you are new to the
smog is clearing.
Yeah. I'm not down for the apocalypse. Normally, these stories are very upsetting to me. And if this were happening in real life, I would absolutely check out well before there was any question of how you survive in the post-apocalypse, because no thank you.
But the difference between a show like this and like a movie like Contagion, where like Contagion, bad things seem to happen to pretty smart people.
Right.
Whereas in a show like this, there's going to be so many dumb people like, you know, like, I'm just going to take a pee, but I'm going to walk a half a mile into the woods to do it.
Right.
Oh, no, a zombie bit my dick off. Now I'm a zombie. Like, you know, it's hard to be scared. It's harder to be scared about the apocalypse.
Well, that won't happen to us.
Somebody.
Well, and the other thing is about Contagion, why I'm not scared of a Contagion reality is I bite my nails, so I probably have already eaten whatever bacteria is going to kill everybody else.
Yeah.
It's a disgusting habit. I acknowledge this, but it may have saved me in the long run.
I mean,
run.
But what are the signifiers that it's time for you to move on? Like,
oh,
power goes out?
There's no TV?
Yeah.
Yeah, the power goes out and the water goes out. I mean, I barely wanted to stay here when our water was out for like 6 hours. Yeah.
It's like the DVR gets erased. Okay, I'm out.
Yeah. Oh, no, all my front lines. yeah, I like this more than I think anybody else did. I thought the teenagers were less annoying than normal. That may be because I'm used to ones on like Homeland and Ray Donovan and stuff, but I thought Alicia was pretty cool. Maybe because she's dating Maestro Harrell from The Wire, which, you know, raises her like 12 notches from where she started before I realized that was the case, because I love him. He was Randy on The Wire.
Yeah, she's okay.
And at least the Nick thing with the drugs, I mean, presumably, wouldn't say this has scared him straight, because I know that's not how drug addiction works, but if everything is going to break down, he's going to have a harder time getting heroin, and he's going to be having
to make
detox
his own. Yeah.
One way or another.
Like Homer Simpson is homemade Prozac, he's going to have to.
Yeah, I mean, they've gotten over the hump of, like, we can't believe him because he's a drug addict, and, you know, now they clearly know something has happened, so maybe that will be less of a factor going forward, I would hope. But I already don't care about Cliff Curtis's other dumb kid. He just seems like a fucking whiner. What's his name? Christopher?
Shit.
Yeah.
Christopher, yeah.
Yeah, he needs to shut it. So I don't know. With only 6 episodes, I guess I would probably... It would have to get really terrible before I would bail before the season.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if what the show is, you know? Like, whether it's going to just become a clone of The Walking Dead, but set in an urban center, or whether it's going to be something else and it's going to stretch out this introductory phase into the whole outbreak that I'm interested in. Not that I'm not interested in more people just slicing off zombie heads and stuff like that, because that's fun just on a visual level, but I'd rather the show do something different. And I just get the feeling that we're going to get like maximum, you know, 6 episodes and maybe a bit of the next one before it just sort of slides into being the same sort of show.
Yeah.
And that's a shame, but we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, it's unclear what the goal is. You know, like the first Walking Dead, it was, we got to get to a big city, we got to get to the CDC, and that was the whole first season.
Yeah.
Here, it's a lot less clear of where it's going, and especially since there's not the comics as sort of a guidepost.
Right.
It's really uncertain. Like, are they just going to try to survive out of the city? Are they trying to get to the desert? They keep saying, it's unclear whether the goal is to get out of the city or to stay in the city and bunker down.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Coachula.
Oh, sorry.
No, I'm saying it's Coachula because it's like zombies. They're chewing your face off.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Kim Braindashian.
Hi, Libby.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching season 9, episode 4 of Face Off. How did they start the episode out?
Well, they ended off the last episode because they were did not eliminate last episode. So just to give you a refill, on the bottom teams were Jason and Missy and Megan Ora.
And who was eliminated?
Missy.
But she's only 20, so she has a lot of career left.
Yep, because there was someone 43 in there.
And if somebody who's 43 had to start anew, it would be difficult for them because they're so old?
Not so old.
Just older than Missy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Missy is okay with going home. I'm not so surprised that the 20-year-olds are just taking off early.
Yeah.
Because the older people have more experience.
That's true. And this week, they didn't have a foundation challenge or a spotlight challenge. They introduced a new type of challenge. What was it called?
A focus challenge. And that meant I had to really focus.
Just you?
Well, everyone had to focus. It was new.
And what were they focusing on?
The face.
Yes.
So, and the time, because they only had 2 days.
Right, which made it more difficult. And this was the first individual challenge of the season as well.
Can you believe it? Like, they've always been doing groups for so long.
So the individual challenge was to create the protagonist of a mashup, combining a classic literature and horror. And in that description, you learned a lot of new words.
So...
Protagonist.
Protagonist is the main character. Mashup is putting something, two things totally different and just mashing them up together. Mash, 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 mash.
And classic literature. What is literature?
So classic literature is when a really popular old book.
That works for me. So that was a lot of learning.
Learning time. Time for school.
Well, it is almost time for school. And they did mashups of the horror, and there were a lot of different books, and it seemed like everyone was very excited during this challenge.
Just because it's new. They were the first ones to do a focus challenge.
Mm-hmm. Did you like this challenge?
Yeah.
And who is your very favorite?
Jasmine. Did Sherlock Holmes Bloodsucker.
Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock
Holmes. Not homeless.
Didn't it say homeless?
No. And so the horror part was the Bloodsucker. And she, do you remember what hers looked like?
The Daughter of the Devil. It looked interesting.
And the judges really liked it. And Scott was the other one who was on top, and he
was like this Frankenstein's little brother or something.
Frankenstein's monster.
he did Don Quixote, Monster of La Mancha, and he was doing Don Quixote's assistant sidekick guy who was made out of all these pieces of some other people's faces.
That's weird.
But the judges loved it because it was very subtle. Do you know what subtle means?
I know what subtle means, but what's subtle?
Subtle is when it's, the details are that you can only hardly notice them, but even when you just notice them a little bit, they make a big difference. This case. So, who ended up winning?
Worthy of Webster's.
Well, that's pretty good to explain to a 7-year-old.
Sure.
Scott.
And who was eliminated?
It was Brittany. She was trying to make an old woman.
An old woman and a burn victim. So that's two things that are very difficult to show and in one face.
What's a burn victim?
When you are in a fire and your skin melts a little bit.
Yeah, that's part of the horror.
Yes, that would be the horror part. So Brittany got eliminated.
Not just the horror part.
Combine two books. What two books would you mash up?
In this situation, I would want to put a nonfiction book and a fiction book just to put it together and make it fun. Maybe a big chapter book about the human body and maybe Ellie's first reader, she has this first reader, Dora, that she loves.
So you would put Dora and nonfiction,
the body?
Learning about the body?
And Dora.
So Dora would be opened up and you would look inside her?
Yeah.
Would it be cartoony or real?
Well, there's nonfiction and fiction, so some pages would be cartoony, some pages just kind of looking more nonfiction. There would be some pages with Dora and seeing inside her body, but also just the body and just Dora at some pages. It would be all over the place.
That sounds like an interesting read.
And an all over the place one too.
Yeah. Well, thanks for speaking with me this week, Liv.
You're welcome, and we'll see you next week for our next episode of...
Is this where I say face off?
Yes.
Face off!
Yeah. I was going to say, I kind of want to see that Dora book, but maybe I don't. Maybe I don't.
At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now Domer.
Domer.
Listen to it.
All right, guys.
You really get a sense of the distance between us and Hawaii and Omar, who's in Austin.
Tiny microsecond faster.
At least it's making sense. Yes. At least it's making sense spatially.
All right, here's what's up in Under the Dome. We got some flashbacks. So if you remember our discussion of he might not have even come up because he was such a small part, but when we talked about the season premiere on this podcast, we may have mentioned that the big new bad guy at Acteon, the evil corporation outside of the dome, is played by Eric LaSalle. So he came back. He's busted into the dome. He's brought a bunch of his Acteon, like, SWAT guys.
Wait, he got into the dome?
Yeah.
There's a door now?
Yes, there's been a door since season two.
But I thought it was just out. Christ. I thought it was just out.
No, you can get in as well.
Okay.
But it seems like...
So it's more like a door to a kitchen in a restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. So he's busted in. He's brought with him this new hacker girl, Lily, who's played by Gia Mantegna. And then we also got a bunch of flashbacks to the reason that he's so obsessed with finding all these eggs or whatever.
Batteries.
Well, there was that. Yeah, okay. I guess this happened after that. But Sarah Paul McCrane was also in this episode, I'm sorry to report. And he was in the flashbacks. He plays the father of this girl, Lily. And he was one of the scientists at Acteon that put one of the old eggs together from all the fragments. And then as soon as he did, it made him egg crazy. And he took off his gloves, put his hands on it, and then he got eggitis. So this is why...
The helicopter fell on him.
Yeah. So Hector now has him in, like, floating in a tube in his, like, t-shirt and boxer shorts at Acteon. But he's come back into the dome, I guess, to get the... try to get the research that Dr. Frank Whaley was doing on trying to find a cure for this infection. It's so confusing and stupid. And it seems like maybe Hector may have blown the door back out behind him so that this guy in the plastic tube is fucked, I guess, because no one is there to look after him as he floats through space.
Change his water.
He's not even in water. He's just floating in air. It's very strange.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Big Jim had to, in the same, like, three scenes apart, had to cast doubts on the development of this serum that's supposed to cure the infection and on Julia's solution of curing Barbie of his eggitis by kissing him in the last episode. So it's like, pick a lane of which thing you don't believe can actually work, because now you're just against everything. And Eva is still pregnant. Her pregnancy that was announced 2 days ago is now full term because Christine Price, the Mark Helgenberger character, has assembled a bunch of young, fertile women, and it seems like Eva is eating them because Julius finds a mass grave of all of them, like, just right outside the barn where they're keeping Eva, and now she's, like, got a basketball-sized, you know, baby bump.
Wow.
So there are three more episodes left to go.
Oh, my God.
You know what this show needs? A shark.
Yeah.
Well, they have a lake.
Yeah.
There could be a shark in it. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
Lake shark.
Do you have any questions?
I followed about 2% of that.
It's impossible to follow because it's so stupid.
Yeah. I'm just imagining a guy floating in white space like that scene from Futurama now.
Yeah. That's basically what he's like. He looks like, what's his face? Qbert? He looks exactly like that in his clone tube. That's what he looks like.
I just think, like, that somebody just wrote all these weird, disparate ideas on cue cards, threw them on the floor, started picking them up at random, and they just wrote a script. Mm-hmm. And it sounds amazing when you don't have to watch it. Thank you, Tara.
There's so much more that I didn't get into, also. Yes?
I have a question.
Please.
Do you think it's possible that Noah Wiley, as the librarian... could also bust into the dome and solve everything with, like, looking things up in an encyclopedia that's magical?
I wish I thought that were true.
Now, these guys in the dome have been there for a long time, so he's doing that?
Now, as of this week, it's been 4 weeks, they say, in the opening.
Are you sure he's going to be doing that, or is he there to collect overdue?
Either way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, it's a time for Around the Dial, a segment in which we each bring something about TV to the table. We're going to start with Tara.
I just wanted to briefly talk about Documentary Now. It's the new documentary parody series on IFC. It premiered last week. It's comes from Lorne Michaels' production company, but it was created by Seth Meyers and Fred Armisen and Bill Hader are in it. I can't remember if they had a hand in actually creating it too, but the first episode was their half-hour parody of Grey Gardens called Sandy Passage, and it's so funny. If you've seen Grey Gardens, it's hilarious. I watched it with Dave, who I think only maybe saw Grey Gardens like over my shoulder when we lived in New York. Possibly.
I know of it. I know
yeah,
the gist,
I mean, I know you know the
it.
Reference, but you haven't seen the movie like really to watch it.
Right.
And so I was laughing at all kinds of stuff in it because it's like some of it was so note perfect to Grey Gardens that it was hilarious to me. It apparently did not work on Dave.
I will say, like, for me, having not watched Grey Gardens, the last third of it was surprisingly hilarious.
Well, the last third of it takes a very different path from the actual Grey Gardens story.
Obviously.
in a hilarious way. But also, Sarah Richard from Felicity is in it. He's playing one of the documentarians in this Grey Gardens spoof, and he is super foxy now. He really grew up super cute.
He had this like transition. Foxy moment. He was on like maybe two Alias episodes, I think.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They made him like pierce his ear in the basement of some horrible German sex club, and he managed to be kind of cute during that.
Yeah.
Even though he's a foot shorter than me. Mm-hmm. I've always loved that character on Felicity, so I think I may have to check this out now based on Richard Code.
I mean, he's mostly behind the camera, but still, when you do get to see him, and he wears glasses as well. He's definitely had his Patrick Dempsey moments, so shout out to that guy.
Nice.
But yeah, it's funny, and the next episode looks like it's going to be a parody of the Vice show on HBO, which should be pretty funny too. So it's Thursdays at 10 Eastern on IFC, and it's already been renewed for not one more season, but two more seasons. So IFC is pretty bullish on this one, and I am too. I will continue to watch.
And their Laura Linney is.
Oh yeah, and they have Helen Mirren introducing every episode. The conceit of it is, it's like the 50th anniversary of this documentary show, and so they're like going through their greatest hits of the past 50 years. So that's why every episode is going to be in a different style. So yeah, check
Amazing.
It out.
Amazing.
Omar.
So I've tried at least four or five times with Comedy Central's Why with Hannibal Buress. I love Hannibal Buress. I think he's fantastic.
Yep.
I am bullish on Comedy Central. I think they've been on a hot streak with Key and Peele, Broad City, Amy Schumer, Review. I mean, all my favorite shows seem to be on Comedy Central. And I don't know why this show doesn't work. I've tried and tried, and it's one of those shows where every time I watch it, I come out of it feeling like I got burned. Like, it just did not work.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is. I think they just maybe haven't figured out how to harness his persona into something that's a showcase.
Glad you didn't say energy, because
I don't even think it's that, because I think you could build a show around that. I think you could like almost like a Curb Your Enthusiasm type show around that persona. But what it is, it's just sort of like a grab bag of stuff that's trying to be topical. They film it each week, so it's trying to be almost like a John Oliver show, but not nearly as smart or funny. The shots that they take at topics seem really obvious and lame, and the filmed stuff, the on the street stuff, is just doesn't work. And I don't know what it is, because I think he's a great stand up. I think he's very good on Broad City and the Eric Andre Show. I think he brings an element to those shows that are a good counterpoint to the other energies on the show. But this one, I don't know. I'm really struggling.
I'm surprised you gave it that many episodes. We watched one. We're like, this is dismal.
I don't even think we got all the way to the end. We might have only watched like the first two thirds of it.
I keep thinking they're going to figure it out. Like, they're throwing stuff at the wall. Obviously, they're trying to change it up every week. They've like put in music and then taken it out. Like he keeps referencing it on the show. Like, hey, that didn't work last week. We're going to try this instead. It's like, wow.
They
actually acknowledge that it's not working.
Some comedians just like they don't. Translate in outside of stand-up, I think. And like another one that I always baffles me is still in the air is Comedy Bang Bang, because like Ackerman's really funny,
the podcast
is really great, the show just doesn't fire on all cylinders. And considering he's like a Mr. Show alum, I just kind of figured he would know his stuff a bit better, and he does. A lot of stuff falls flat, a lot of stuff is like so stagey that I think they think the staginess is funny, but it's not.
Well, it's produced by the Tim and Eric guys, which always makes me think, okay, this is that anti-comedy that I don't like. They're trying to do like some kind of commentary on comedy by not being funny, which I don't think is funny personally. So I just have categorized that under not for me, along with Tim and Eric.
Oh, we have been hitting a chunk of 30 Rock reruns that all feature Hannibal Buress's hobo character. He pops in and out. No, I was talking about her.
It's a toilet or a woman. It's anything you need it to be. Yeah. I to me, that show, why seemed like it wasn't so much that he was the issue. I felt like it was like a throwback to old Comedy Central shows before they like figured out how to make shows good. Like it was sort of, it's more like Chocolate News or something, like more where it was just built around a persona of someone without actually having a lot of thought into what the content of the show would be. So like a lot of it from what we saw felt like it could have been anyone as the host. It didn't really seem like it spoke to his strengths at all, and it was just more like, oh, here's a format that we had lying around that we were going to see if David Spade could do 20 years ago, but let's get see if Hannibal Buress could do it now. But you know what it's like that.
And it's not deconstructing those kind of shows, like,
right?
Because that would be a smart approach. Like Eric Andre is a definite deconstruction of talk shows and trying to turn it into something else. This just feels like really thrown together. It just in a bad way.
Well,
I'm sorry.
We have another season of Broad City to enjoy him in, so that'll be good.
Yeah, I hope this one gets canceled and he gets a better show. That's my best hope.
Project Greenlight is returning. I choose to believe in small part to my agitating for it in our program parole board feature.
You're the kingmaker.
But possibly because it was just too awesome not to be on the air. It is returning, I think, September 13th.
That sounds right.
3 weeks. 3 weeks from yesterday. So I have undertaken a rewatch because HBO, bless their hearts, have put the first two seasons up on HBO Go. I hope you will all join me on the rewatch. I have watched one episode and had to like lie down at how young everyone is. like fetuses, seriously. Even Chris Moore, who, because I also watched The Chair, which was Starz's sort of like Chris Moore take on this from last year, like I just saw him, and then to see him, I mean, like everyone was so young and they're going through this process, and Matt Damon and Ben Affleck are like so sincere about how they want to give some filmmaker a shot who doesn't have any connections. And then, I mean, if you've ever seen Stolen Summer, you know how that turns out. And if you saw Project Greenlight, like it is definitely worth revisiting. It's really funny. Not trying to be funny.
Yeah.
Except sometimes it is funny when it's trying to be funny. Like, Ben Affleck is, I forgot, like, pretty charming and good off the cuff.
Yep.
So, yeah, I really encourage everyone to rewatch along with me once we get to season three, which is the Gulager feast, Tara Reid equivalent actress not wanting to take her clothes off in a horror movie, and that's the only reason that she was hired for the role season. That is available on a YouTube channel, and when we get there, I will post a link to that so that everyone can watch along if they would like to. But yeah, it's a really good example of the reality sort of, not exactly competition, but competition genre, done really well with like the utmost genuine good intentions and uncynically, and how that turns into this beautiful watchable disaster with Jeff Bayless getting screamed at, and I love it.
So
please
much.
Come along for the ride.
When is the first post of your rewatch going to plop on previously.tv?
I believe that will land in a splattery heap Wednesday or Thursday of this week, and we are recording on Monday. So just a day or two from when you are probably listening to this.
Look out for that.
Intruders in Cloud City, touch down and investigate.
From Kenner's Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back collection, Twin Pod Cloud Car.
Bespin Guard, who is she?
I'm Princess Leia. I'm being followed, Lando.
Quick, get in.
Lando Calrissian and other action figures, each sold separately. You can open and close both cockpits and push the landing gear up.
Don't worry, they'll never catch you now.
Twin Pod Cloud Car from Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back collection. Action figures, each sold separately. From Kenner.
Well, first of all, it's really nice of them to let the girl in for the Princess Leia commercial. Phew. Lando, a sight unseen, not going to help Princess Leia. He's already had to make a deal with the Empire. So this role-playing is all over the place, guys. But really, the reason I wanted to bring this up is that Christmas 1980, which was the first Christmas after Empire Strikes Back came out. If under the tree you found that you had a twin pod cloud car, it really meant your parents waited too late to try to shop for you. And that was the only thing left, because I guarantee there's not one kid in 1980 who really wanted a twin pod cloud car. It didn't have guns, didn't have anything that ejects. It was just silly looking. It didn't do anything cool in the movie. And yes, I did get one, got that one, but I also got a snow speeder, so at least I got something that was cool in 1980. And it was just the toy of utter disappointment. It was the first time I remember having to put on a brave face. It was like plastic socks, you know?
Age eight, your innocence was gone.
From Class City.
Yay. I think that we got that one and it wound up like we just didn't play with it that much. And then at some point, me and my best friend Sharon strapped a Barbie to it. And it was on this vehicle that this Barbie and Ken disappeared down a storm drain during a very heavy rainstorm that made a lot of rivers in the neighborhood. And we were pretty bummed about the Ken because we only had one. But the whatever cloud car, we were like, bye. Acceptable loss is my point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, mom and dad, and I know you tried, but bad bye.
Hey, Natalie. It's your sister.
And your other sister.
And we just wanted to wish you luck.
Good luck. Yay.
On trying to convince Dave to unpierce Jean. In honor of such a momentous occasion, we will now have Dave sing along to Jean's Afraid of Snakes song. Good luck.
You are awesome.
Dave, whenever you're ready.
I'm not afraid of ghosts. I'm not afraid of sharks. I'm not afraid of cancer. I'm just afraid of snakes. They really creep me out. Where are their arms and legs? It's not okay.
That was very well done, Dave.
Thank you.
Wow, Dave.
I had to practice it, actually, believe it or
next
not.
Next season on Fix My Coal.
Clearly you practiced.
All right, so we're finally getting back to this. About a month ago, I was talking about The Pierce, and which is, again, to explain things anew to our new viewers, The Pierce is a concept we came up with a long time ago, originally called the Tobias, because it is a character that we think could be removed from a show with minimal actual change happening to the show, originally named after Tobias Funke, but renamed for Pierce Hawthorne from Community. I thought that maybe Gene was the Bob's Burgers of... I mean, the Pierce of Bob's Burgers. He's the Bob's Burgers of Pierce. What? He can be, I thought, lifted from the show, and the show dynamics wouldn't actually change that much. I said that he's not very integral to a lot of the goings-on of the show. He is sort of a color character, you know? He's just sort of a punch-up joke device. He sort of punctuates a lot of the scenes. He's usually the last person to say something before commercial, just as a button to things. And Natalie said, no, Dave, you're wrong. And she started tweeting me all the reasons why Gene was not the Pierce. And I was like, lady, I'm getting sick of reading all these tweets. No, just joking. I invited her to put this in audio form and make the argument to both me and to the listenership on the show. So without further ado, here is Natalie, or should I, Natalie, which is my favorite thing so far.
Hello, David T. Cole and the rest of the Extra Hot Great Gang. Thank you very much for allowing me to submit my argument for why Gene Belcher is not the Pierce of Bob's Burgers. First off, I wanted to just go through all of the episodes in which Gene is the main part of the A plot. So real quick, Spaghetti Western and Meatballs, Torpedo, Beef Squatch, The Unbearable Likeness of Gene, OT, The Outside Toilet, The Unnatural, Gene It On, Work Hard or Die Trying Girl, one of my favorites, Little Hard Dad, and Itty Bitty Diddy Committee. So he actually has carried a number of great episodes. That reason alone, I think, should win the argument. But I have more! So without further ado, on to Gene's relationships, which make him an integral part of the family and an essential part of this show. First up, Gene and Bob. Their relationship is sometimes a bit strained, and they're not super close, but there are some really great moments throughout the show between them. First up, in Spaghetti Western and Meatballs, we see that They don't always connect, but Bob tries really hard to make their relationship closer. Also, there's a few really wonderful moments just throughout the seasons, to name a few. When Gene is in his tablescaping competition, nobody gets more excited than Bob. And one of my favorite storylines in the show, when Gene becomes Little Bob.
A little more off the top, sprinkle on the back and the ears, a little more glue. Ba, 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 ba.
Show me!
Voila!
It's perfect! I've been tarred and bobbed!
I don't know how I got that arm hair to look so sad, but I did it!
Can I get in here? I need to... Oh my god!
It's like looking in a mirror!
No, it isn't, Gene.
Who's Gene?
I already can't tell who's who.
Take that stuff off.
Lynn, get in here and settle this!
Don't call your mother Lynn.
What? Oh! Hey! Whoa, travel size Bob! Aw.
Glenda, you're encouraging him.
I need the bathroom. Oh, wow, this is confusing.
No, it's not.
You're my family and I love you, but you're terrible. You're all terrible.
I don't say that.
Well, that's all you say.
Unbelievable. Gene.
Bob.
All right, enough.
Enough.
I'm not doing this.
Yes, you are.
No, I... Oh, my God. Oh,
he's
God.
Really good. Oh. He's good.
Oh. He's not good, Lynn.
He's not good, Lynn.
He's good.
I don't know.
Gene.
Like what, Bob?
Lynn.
Why?
Gene.
Lynn.
Lynn. I'm leaving.
Oh, he's so cute.
I love that episode so much. Next up, Gene and Linda, singing and food.
Think about it. Why aren't there any Thanksgiving carols? I'm going to write a classic and make $1 million, and then I'm going to buy a car.
I believe in you, Gene. I'll be in your song.
Great, but you don't get any of the profits, and I'm going to be very critical.
I love it.
Enough said. My favorite Gene and Tina moment is when they are being used as human shields in a pillow fight in the Slumber Party episode. And finally, the relationship between Gene and Louise, which is one of the greatest, warmest relationships in the show. He really humanizes her, and they have a relationship that is so very sweet. Back to the Spaghetti Western and Meatballs episode, we learn about Gene and Bob's relationship, but we also learn a bit more about Louise and Gene's relationship and how much she loves him and enjoys spending time with him. Also, in a later season, in an episode called Late Afternoon in the Garden of Bob and Louise, Louise is busy plotting against her arch nemesis, Logan, and Gene is in the restaurant and calls her up and tells her how much he misses her. Another great Gene and Louise moment is when they are hiding in the closet watching Tina and Tammy during the Bad Tina episode.
Oh, I hope you got a jar to pee in, Gene. We're going to be in here a long time.
I've got Tina's rain boot.
Okay, I'll take the other one.
Another great moment, which of course is followed by them blackmailing her. That is a wonderful episode. Ultimately, Gene and Louise are super sweet and wonderful and sometimes incredibly dangerous together. The two of them are arguably the closest siblings. Finally, perhaps the most important connection is Gene's place in the relationship between all three of the siblings. His main contribution, I would say, is he is the cheerleader. And not just an actual cheerleader, as he is in Gene It On. But he is up for anything. He is always excited to participate in whatever his sisters are doing. He is positive. He is happy to play along, help them, do whatever needs to be done. And far from punch up, he has memorable comments and silly non sequiturs that really couldn't be stated by any other character. And one last point. There is something to be said for the three-kid dynamic. Not just for the three of them, but also there are many storylines throughout the seasons where two of the kids are off on an adventure and that leaves one kid with either one or both of the parents. That leads to really cool plots and shenanigans that get to happen, and it wouldn't happen if there were only two kids, because it would upset the balance. One belcher off on his or her own is never as fun as two or more belchers off on an adventure. Unless it's Linda trying to come home, in which case it's great. Thank you very much for listening to my argument. Tara, I hope you'll agree. Sarah, I hope this encourages you to check out some more Bob's Burgers. And I hope I've convinced you, Dave.
All right. So I just wanted to remind people, when I first brought this up, I did say I realize that I'm like, this is a minority opinion that I have, and that I'm prepared for your wrath. I'll take it. But before I get into my arguments, I thought I'd throw it to Tara because I know you watched it.
When you were recapping your original argument, I do think that you're right on the main, that a lot of times Gene just seems to be on the fringes of scenes and just contributing lines that potentially, with all due respect to Natalie, could have been said by Louise or Tina, you know.
She also said that.
Change the tone.
Yeah, she also said that, like, you know, he does a lot of silly non sequiturs, which to me is punch
up. That is your point. That's your point. Yes. Yeah. But I do, she did nail some of the great moments. The one where he becomes Little Bob is amazing. That is a hilarious Gene episode.
Yes.
And the one where he gets involved in competitive tablescaping is also, that was a really funny storyline.
Yeah.
But I still, and I also take a point on the, you know, the three kid dynamic.
I don't know. I think
principle.
It works on Simpsons.
Yeah.
With
I
Bart
guess.
And Lisa.
That's true.
Yeah.
Right, because Maggie's...
It's just a better... I mean, the problem with... I mean, the Pierce doesn't mean the character is bad.
No, it just means that if Gene went to boarding school, the show would not be that different.
Right.
Yeah.
Certainly, there are a lot of funny, good Gene moments, and I think Little Gene is probably the best of them. Like
Little
that,
Bob.
Little Bob, yeah. Is the best of them. I don't despise Gene as a character or anything like that. That's not what we're saying. What we're saying is he is on the bottom of the essential character list.
He just sometimes feels extraneous.
He does. And I think that he is often just sort of, as I said, like a punch-up character. Like he's got something silly to do, and Bob's Burgers loves silly stuff. He is a great receptacle for that. So I understand he serves a purpose in that regard. But again, because so much of his stuff is nonsense, you know, in the best, you know, use of that word, silly, that it seems like he could be removed and that nonsense transferred to a different character.
In fact, I would also say that her point that Gene's character is that he's always up for anything just proves your point even more, because it sort of means you can slot him into any storyline doing anything.
Yeah.
And there's never going to be a moment where Gene's like, I'm not going to do that for whatever reason, which sort of makes him, you know, just a utility player as opposed
to... Yeah, and the difference between Pierce Hawthorne and Gene Belcher is I really wanted Pierce off the show. And I don't particularly want Gene off the show. I just think he fits the definition of a Pierce.
I agree.
Yeah, I was wondering, Dave, would having more Gene on the show, like having more Gene-centric episodes, actually solve that problem?
I mean, I think the character is just sort of like, he's a catch-all. You know, he's just sort of like a crazy maniac character. Like, he is sort of like the character where the episode where he's Beef Squash is like pretty close to his character all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just sort of a sugar addled, you know, like crazy, energy little boy. And I understand that because I was sort of the same way. And there's a lot of Gene in younger me and today me, and I get it. But I think like the character would have to be written differently, for him to sort of move up the essential character list.
And to me, the problem is that all of the other characters in the Belcher family seem very well defined and thought through from the beginning. Like, you know what a Tina storyline is going to be like because you know what Tina is like, and same with Louise. Like, she has the same kind of chaos as Gene, but it's usually with a purpose, whereas Gene is just like creating chaos for no reason.
Yes.
And so I feel like
there is a Dungeons and Dragons alignment chart to be made out of this.
For sure. Yeah. But I feel like the more episodes we learn about Gene, it just seems more to prove Dave's point, which is that you could have him do anything and it wouldn't matter, cuz we don't know where he would draw the line as a character because he's just up for whatever.
Yeah.
That, not to answer on Dave's behalf.
So in order to split the difference here, let me say this. Gene is an enjoyable character. I do enjoy his antics. Sometimes the voice acting grates on me. I think that they could have made some different choices where he's not always at 11. I think that might help a little bit.
Yeah.
Eugene Merman, maybe, you know, if we go back in history and recast that, I might say a little bit differently about how much I can stand Gene per episode. I don't wish him off the show. That's not what the Pierce is. I just think that he is the least essential character and that we could remove him from Bob's Burgers, which sounds terrible because, like, we're wrenching him away from his family. That's not really the situation. This is not, like, you know, Sophie's Choice or anything like that. But I remain steadfast in my notion that Gene Belcher is the Pierce of Bob's Burgers. All right, it's time for the canon. Sarah D. Bunting, what do you got for
us? Yes. It's a Sopranos. Just kidding. Oh. For once, it's not a Sopranos episode, and it's not a D.B. Cooper episode of anything, although I considered it. It's an X-Files episode, Season 6, Episode 19, The Unnatural. Mm-hmm. As you've probably deduced from the episode title, it's the baseball episode of The X-Files, starring Jesse L. Martin as Josh Exley, a legendary slugger on Negro League team the Roswell Grays, who's more than just a great hitter. David Duchovny wrote and directed the episode and is kind enough to have Fox Mulder nutshell the ep for us in this first clip.
Gray bus lines, you can go home again.
Let me get this straight, A. A free-spirited alien fell in love with baseball and ran away from the other non-fun-having aliens and made himself black because that would prevent him from getting to the majors where his unspeakable secret might be discovered by an intrusive press and public. And you're also implying that...
You certainly have a knack for turning chicken salad into chicken spit.
Aw, that other voice in the scene belongs to one of my famous birthday mates, the great M. Emmett Walsh. Not that mother scratcher, Bill Parker. As present-day Arthur Dales. We spend most of the ep with Arthur Dales of 1947. Dales, an officer with Roswell PD, has discovered Klan flyers offering $500 to anyone who kills Josh Exley. Exley, blissfully ignorant of that bounty as we open the episode, is about to break what was then the single-season home run record in organized baseball of 60, as well as the color barrier in the American League. But Exley's content to slum it in the Cactus League, as we hear in the next clip.
Yes. I heard the Yankees been calling you.
I'm fine playing here in the Cactus Leagues. It's nice and quiet.
Ball! Leave the Cactus alone, son!
I don't know, X. Yankees could use those 60 home runs a year. But now that Jackie Robinson's up there in the bigs, people saying you're going to be next. The first black Negro man of color in the American League. Shoot, X, you'll be famous, man.
I don't want to be no famous man. Just want to be a man.
Over the top! Over the top! Over the top! Fair ball! Home run!
6-1.
Gotta love the selection of the last name for this character and its resulting nickname, X. Anyhow, in the present, Mulder is spending a beautiful Saturday poring over old newspapers, looking for patterns in the obits. An uncharacteristically irresponsible Scully comes down to his lair to give him shit, and after a handsy scuffle that ends in her Rice Dream ice cream cone splattering an old story about Exley, Mulder drops his grand unifying theory of baseball statistics on us in the next clip.
Mulder? You cheat! I can't believe it. You've been reading about baseball this whole time.
I'm reading the box scores, Scully. You'd like it. It's like the Pythagorean theorem for jocks. It distills all the chaos and action of any game in the history of all baseball games into one tiny, perfect, rectangular sequence of numbers. I can look at this box, and I can recreate exactly what happened on some sunny summer day back in 1947. It's like the numbers talk to me. They comfort me. They tell me that even though lots of things can change, some things do remain the same. It's
boring.
Shut up, Scully. Anyway, Mulder spots Dale's name in a photo caption and hunts him up. Although Dales answers the door with, "What took you so long?" He denies he's the Arthur Dales, but Dales' brother, also named Arthur, I don't really remember what's going on with that shit, and it doesn't matter. Then he blows Mulder off, as we hear in this clip.
How do you know my name?
My brother told me all about you. He said you were the biggest jackass in the Bureau since he retired. Yeah, we're big fans. Sometimes we'd stay awake for hours at night just talking about you. Just fascinating. Now, unless you're hiding some Chinese food, let's call it a day.
Eventually, though, present Dales lets Mulder in, fixes him a hot dog, and lets him know that Exley is, historically, not the only Hall of Fame caliber ball player whose talents were literally out of this world, as we hear in the next clip.
I didn't make that up.
You seriously want me to believe that Josh Exley, maybe one of the greatest ball players of all times, was an alien?
They're all aliens, Agent Mulder. all the great ones.
Well, Babe Ruth was an alien.
Yeah?
Joe DiMaggio.
Sure.
Willie Mays.
Well, obviously.
Mantle. Koufax. Gibson.
Bob or Kirk? See, none of the great ones fit in. Not in this world. Not in any other world.
Dales mentions the Cardinals' Bob and the Dodgers' Kirk Gibson's here, and at the end of the episode, Mulder is sporting a Homestead Grays jersey for Josh Gibson, widely considered the best player in any league ever. Back in the past, Dales has invited himself onto the bus and into the dugout with the Roswell Grays to protect Exley. There's an unfortunate incident involving chewing tobacco early on, but after that, the team accepts him. And one night, Dales awakens during a thunderstorm and sees Exley sleeping in his seat on the bus, but his reflection in the bus window is that of a stereotypical alien. Later, Dales gets hit by a pitch, and the blood that seeps out is a toxic green sludge. And then, Dales wakes from a dream one night, sees a strange humanoid lurking around Exley's room next door, and breaks in to find Exley, in his alien form, taking practice swings. Shrieking ensues, as we'll hear in this next clip. That sack of potatoes Foley effect there is Dale's fainting for the first of approximately 15 times. Yeah. A sequence that's pretty hard to do justice to without visuals, but is a good example, in an episode with plenty of them, of the X-Files handling humor pretty well, for a change. The next day on the bus, Exley quietly breaks it down for Dales, and in the process, Duchovny sends a love letter to baseball and its fans in our next clip.
My people guard their privacy zealously.
I can understand that.
They don't like for us to intermingle with your people. Their philosophy is we stick to ourselves, you stick to yourselves, everybody's happy.
So what happened?
Well, you know what happened.
You fell in love with an earthworm.
No. That's all a baseball game. See, it's something you gotta understand about my race. We don't have a word for laughter. We don't laugh. I don't know if you noticed in between all that fainting you was doing. We in very tiny miles, so no smiling even. I tell you, when I saw that baseball game being played, this laughter just rose up out of me. You know the sound a ball makes when it hits the bat? That was like music to me, you know, smell of the grass, leather mitt. First unnecessary thing I ever done in my life. And I fell in love. I didn't know the unnecessary could feel so good. You know, the game was meaningless, but it seemed to mean everything to me. It was useless, but perfect.
Yeah, like a rose?
Yeah, a rose. Yeah. Uh-huh. See, you get it, Arthur. You're a fan. Uh-huh. But I tell you, from that moment on, I just couldn't fix myself to go home.
Kind of unravels for Exley from here as a fellow shapeshifter and bounty hunter tracks him to Roswell, thanks in part to Dales' innocent research. Impersonates Exley while killing a forensic tech Dales had testing Exley's green blood, and honor kills Exley for abandoning his, quote, family. Dales puts two and the square root of pi together and arrives at the confrontation just moments after Exley's gotten fatally stabbed, only to find that, at the moment of his death, Exley has velveteen rabbited into one of the humans whose game he so loved, and that's our last clip.
Arthur, get off of me. Our blood is like acid to you people. Arthur, get away. Don't touch it.
It's just blood, Exley. It's just blood.
The episode ends with Mulder grab-assily teaching Scully to hit while dropping a bunch of hitting coach banalities like just make contact that could easily apply to their relationship and to Mulder's larger myth arc quest. Unexplained is the presence of grade school fan slash exposition dumper poor boy, the same age and wearing the same clothes as he was in 1947, throwing batting practice to them. But having to fill in on our own blanks on that is rather charming versus just weird and confusing. Okay, it's also weird and confusing, but the kid is played by an actor named Jesse James, who you might remember as Ben's community service charge on Felicity, and gimlet-eyed child killer from an ER episode, and this is his most likable role. We also close on the respective Daleses looking up at the sky as a spiritual plays, and it's a nice piece of grieving acting business from both Walsh and public morals's Frederick Lane as 47 Dales. There isn't much to the episode, really. It's just kind of a bittersweet little story about an alien who loved baseball and tried to play it among its inventors as long as he could. But the episode gets baseball and what we love about it. None of the guys cast as players looks incompetent, and unlike a certain other Los Angeles-based show I might mention, when you hear a Dodger game on the soundtrack, America's baseball grandpa, the incomparable Vin Scully, is in fact calling the game. Thank you. Jesse L. Martin is super charismatic as Exley. He even sings. There isn't too much foolishness involving stupid Mulder's stupid sister. It's just a fun, well-paced episode, one of the show's better known, and for good reason. So I hope the panel will consider inducting it into Extra Hot Great's own Cooperstown, the canon.
Omar, now, we had a little chat last night, and you were telling me this was the first time you ever have seen this episode. You somehow missed it.
Really?
This one, yeah. Huh. I was never a regular X-Files viewer. Like, I caught episodes here and there, but I never saw it from the beginning. I kind of caught it a few seasons in. I was dating someone that was really into it, so I started watching it then. And and this was one of the ones that I must have missed during that period, because I didn't see it when it originally aired. So this is all completely fresh to me. And it really holds up. I was surprised by how much I liked it, because I'm not a big baseball person, I'm not a big X-Files fan, and yet it really captured my imagination. I love Jesse L. Martin, so it was awesome to see him in this, and I loved the interactions between Scully and Mulder, which, you know, was always something that kept me wanting to see more, and I just never got around to it. It was a really well-done episode, it didn't feel like it was taking itself so seriously, like some episodes that I've seen where I was like, I don't know what's going on and I don't really care, because the stakes are much higher than my interest in this episode. This one felt like it had a lighter touch than some of the ones that I've seen. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it. And being a non-baseball fan, it still, all those elements still kind of spoke to me. I really, really enjoyed it.
Well, first of all, baseball is boring.
You're boring.
Yeah, I know. But I agree with Scully on this one. And I was like, I don't remember Scully being so flirty before. Like, this is season 6. But then I remember this scene that when she goes, "Is the weekend?" And I was thinking back, you know, when you go to the office on the weekend and you sort of give yourself permission to be more human?
Yeah.
And that really came across in that scene. And I kind of enjoyed that. So I thought that was a nice little touch to the script, that she was a little more goofy, a little less, you know, stoic than she usually is, and with her tofu-y ice cream, really living it up. this is a great episode. It's really sort of, as you say, it's got a light touch. It's just sort of fun. I can't speak to whether it gets baseball. I will totally take your word for it, Sarah. The only really knock I have against this is, like, can we have a downtrodden black story without a spiritual him, maybe just once? That it's tropey. Although if you're speaking of
I didn't love that either, but because he was singing it, I sort of felt like that's why that was
right.
There.
They had to give him a reason.
And that ties into my next thing on tropes, which is, if you're going to have a magical black man, way to have that be the most magical of all. out of this world in an
it
alien.
Really is.
Like, wisdom beyond our world, sort of, you know, it's actual literal, you know, it's so, that trope's tired, you know, but they kind of managed to halfway turn it around, I think, in this episode by virtue of him just being like an outsider twice over, sort of. I wasn't paying attention. I didn't realize that Duchovny wrote and directed this. So I'm doubly surprised at the quality of this episode, coming from, you know, an actor turned director over the course of a TV show. And, you know, David Duchovny is history's greatest acting robot. So kudos to him for pulling off directed episode of television.
Yeah, I said this to Dave. You can really tell the difference between how big a budget the show had from this episode versus the last one we considered for the canon when Eve submitted the one about Scully's tattoo, that this episode looks so much more expensive. Like, I know it's partly the period stuff, but when you see them on the field, like, it really looks... It's movie quality production design, I thought. All the stuff with the old signs and everything. And God, Jesse L. Martin is such a pleasure to watch. I love him. As soon as when you put this in the doc that this was what you were going to present, I was like, oh, that one. Like, it's so much fun to watch him. You know, I won't go so far as to say baseball is boring. It's not my thing, Dave. I'm not as rude as you.
I'm just telling it like it is.
But, you know, I also can't speak to that aspect of it, but I certainly... I feel like I have a better sense of just the joy of playing it from watching Jesse L. Martin's performance in this episode. Like, he's almost never not smiling. You can tell he's happy the whole way through. Like, he really sells the story of this alien who just loved baseball so much he figured out a way to infiltrate it.
He gives you a taste of the zen of baseball. I'll give you that.
For sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also like the casting of him because he kind of looks like a gray alien a little bit. That sounds crazy. But he knows he does not have a prominent nose. He's got that, you know, smiley mouth. Like, when he transforms into it.
He does have the cheekbones. Yeah,
you kind of can see it.
Yeah.
The thing with the kid was my one knock on the episode, which is like, why is he still the same age? He hasn't aged since 1947, but
nor updated his cap wear.
No, but as Sarah said, well, maybe we can't explain it, but who cares? Yeah. I kind of agree. Like, everything doesn't have to, you know, be tied up in a nice little bow and whatever. Yeah. Maybe this is part of this guy being partly unreliable narrator,
and that
he is a crazy old man.
And we get less and less of that in the internet age too, right? Because everybody demands closure, answers, every mystery needs to be solved.
Yep.
And
like the Russian, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is not a typical episode in that Scully is not in it that much, except at the beginning and the end, but it's good enough that I will even overlook my biggest knock on the episode other than the kid, which is everybody fucking horse playing with their ice cream treats around some library books. That's very rude. And when you drop your cone, fucking pick it up and clean off the page.
That's an original
copy. Other people
copy.
Might want to use that someday. Yeah, it's absolutely an original copy.
And then he just rips it out like, problem solved? No, like, even not really.
That reminds me, I remember doing a history project in grade 9, I'm going to guess, and all these kids, they would go into the periodical section of the school library and like Life magazines from whatever, it was like a World War II essay, and for the pictures, they were actually cutting them out of the magazine not photocopying. Teacher failed everybody who had a non-photocopy.
Good.
Yeah.
Love
good for
that
him
teacher.
Or
her. Miss Ollie.
Good job, Miss Ollie. Yes. Yeah. As someone whose very first paying job was working as a page in a library, I was very offended by that.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the episode is good enough that I can overlook it. So excellent pick, Sarah.
Okay, so let's put this to a vote. Three strikes and you're out.
Ah.
Will you get hits and ribs, RBIs?
Nope.
All right.
Keep going.
Omar, what say you?
My only concern is that I don't know how, having not seen more X-Files, I don't know how indicative it is of it as a series. Like, I feel like I've seen episodes that are way darker than this.
Right. X-Files runs the gamut.
Yeah, but then I've seen some funny ones. Then I've seen some funny ones as well. So, but yeah, as an hour of TV that I really enjoyed and that made me want to watch more X-Files, this was definitely up there. So yeah, I'm going to say yes.
That's the beauty of the X-Files is, as I was watching it, I always kind of wanted to get more information about the alien conspiracy. But it's the monsters of the week ones that really, you know, last.
When they're done well, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, I'm also going to say yes, Tara.
Yep, me too. Good job, Sarah.
Woo! Grand slam.
All right, The X-Files, Season 6, Episode 19, The Unnatural. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time for Winner and the Loser of the Week. Tara has her winner.
Winner of the week is Aaron Sorkin because Quentin Tarantino. Hey, he's not my winner of the week. He's just a winner of the week. Quentin Tarantino did
a big interview
with Vulture, with New York Magazine as part of their fall preview, where he talked about how much he loved The Newsroom, that he would watch every episode three times. He loved it so much because he wanted to just, like, marinate in the dialogue. I'm paraphrasing.
Wow.
And the interviewer, Lane Brown, tried to be like, well, it wasn't really very critically acclaimed. And he was like, well, what do TV critics know? They review off the first episode, which I can say, someone who covered every episode of The Newsroom, I watched every episode of The Newsroom, and my hate is very well informed, but never mind. Still, a nice auteur to auteur love fest between Aaron Sorkin and Quentin Tarantino. So good job, I guess.
And a loser of the week?
I'd just like to say for the record that I've never seen a fucking frame of The Newsroom, and I still hate it, and I regret nothing. Losers of the week, 90210 stars. Mm. We mentioned this on one of our other podcasts, again with this, but Shannen Doherty recently revealed via a lawsuit filing, of all terrible things, that she is suffering from breast cancer. We wish her a full and speedy recovery.
Absolutely.
And in other news, Brian Austin Green got the old dumperoo from Megan Fox. And
dumperoo!
Hey, maybe he dumped her. Just kidding.
It sounds like a segment on, like, Commander Tom's Saturday Morning Show. And now this week's dumperoos.
He has named two out of his three children completely unacceptable things, including Bodie, which, ooh, I'm sorry, unless your specific reason and you put this on the birth certificate is, I fucking love Point Break. Still, maybe it's okay in that case.
Or the
other one, I was going to say,
or you like a trout, what do they call it? Lake trout, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
What do you eat on The Wire? Was that it?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Cassius with a K.
Yeah, Cassius with a K.
It's funny because I've just been watching the end of Flipping Out, the Bravo Redoing Your House show. Look, I don't have to be respectable every second of my life, everybody. But in these last couple of episodes, Jeff Lewis, who the show is about, has been redoing their house. So it's been kind of bittersweet watching them figure out, oh, we're going to not do this one instead. Instead, we're going to buy an even bigger house because Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was such a big hit for Megan Fox. Like, oh, you're going to wish you held on to that slightly smaller house, maybe. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think probably less of a big hit for Megan Fox was having two kids in the space of a year. I feel like that's maybe going to strain a marriage.
Her brand also.
That's beside the point. This segment brings up an interesting question.
Does it?
Which is this.
Oh?
How come when Sarah just says 90210, Tara's not right there with the correction? It's Beverly Hills 90210.
Because Beverly Hills could be a lot of different shows.
And 90210 could be the new 90210.
Well, if we're talking about Brian Austin Green.
I rest my case, Your Honor. It's game time.
You and that soundboard.
I have the power. All right, everybody. This is the eighth game time of the season. The standings currently are Tara 3, Sarah 2, and Valued Guest 2.
So tight.
Yes. Today's game time comes from Snides Aside, who earns himself an extra credit. Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. I'll let Sides explain. This game will test your knowledge of various types of television bullshit. And takes place over 13 rounds. You will all be given a category before each round, and all you have to do for 1 point is guess whether a given item belongs to the category or not.
Oh.
Basically, it's a true or false quiz, and it couldn't be easier except for the trick questions. Sorry in advance. Now, this was inspired by Sarah's idea for a game time a few episodes ago about is this anything? You know, is a name of something actually a TV show or a character?
Oh, is this on Investigation Discovery or
exactly? This is inspired by your missive on that.
Love
so
it.
That is how we play. I will explain each round as we go along, but first let's see who's going to go first.
We will start with Tara.
All right, Tara. And then we're going to go to Omara, and then to Sarah.
Okay.
All right.
Yes.
Are we ready to play? Is this anything?
Yes.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
You will be our first for round one. Round one, is this the stage name of an American gladiator?
Okay.
Hawk.
Yes.
All right, moving on. Omar, ice. Ice.
Yes.
Nitro.
Yes.
Knight. with a K.
Yes.
Quake. Quake.
Yes.
Shark.
Shark?
Shark.
No, shark. No. No, it's shark.
It is neither of, it is neither of those.
I don't know if you answered over Tara's.
Sorry.
No to both.
I mean, yes, you're right.
Shark is correct.
Yeah, shark is correct.
Sorry. I'll stop fucking up now.
Yeah, yeah, you do. You do that. Okay. Zap.
Not.
Condor.
No.
He was not an American gladiator, but he was an Australian gladiator, says the notes. Condor. All right, and finally, jazz.
Jazz?
Jazz.
Yes.
Hey!
Correct.
Is that a girl one?
I don't know.
And a Transformer.
Yeah, right. And a Transformer. All right, that's round one.
Okay, Omar and Sarah tied with three each. I have one.
All right, round two. Is this a show Aaron Paul has appeared on? Pushing Daisies.
No.
Joan of Arcadia.
Yes.
The Simpsons.
Yes.
ER.
Yes.
Third Rock from the Sun.
No.
Oh!
The Price is Right.
Yes.
As a contestant.
As a viral video around the end of the show. Yes.
Veronica Mars.
Yes.
NYPD Blue.
No.
Damn it.
Beverly Hills 90210.
Yes.
Correct. Round two's over.
Okay, now Omar and I are tied with four each. Sarah has six.
All right, round three. Is this a television show with over 200 episodes? Tara.
Yeah.
Benson.
No.
158. Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Yes.
296. Wow.
Jeez.
CSI New York.
New York. No.
I mean,
what?
You're right.
Oh,
sorry.
Oh, God. I was gonna say.
I keep on wanting to press wrong for false. You're correct. That is a point for you. 197.
I'm
three shy.
Wow. Surprised. I'm shocked it went that high.
Yeah.
Me too.
All right. Roseanne.
Yes.
222. Beavis and Butthead.
No.
Question, is the show over 200 episodes? Beavis and Butthead had 200 episodes.
Oh,
so you are correct. It was not over 200.
Wow.
Yeah. Teletubbies.
Teletubbies? Shit. No.
It did. 365. One for every day of the year.
Those little bastards.
X-Files.
200. Yes.
201.
Okay. Jeez.
Wow.
According to Jim.
Yes.
Surprisingly, no. 182.
Wow.
There's hope for our planet.
Murphy Brown.
Murphy Brown, no.
Yes. Oh. 247.
Good grief.
Holy shit. Speaking of The Walking Dead.
Shit's heating up. Omar has six. Sarah and I tied with seven each.
All right. Very close game.
Very close.
As we go into round four of 13.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the title of a Melrose Place? All right.
Yep.
This is the title of an episode of Melrose Place.
Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
Devil with the G string on.
Yes.
Dr. Jekyll saves his hide.
No.
It was.
Sure.
Mancini Impossible.
I'm going to say no.
What?
There was a Melrose Impossible, but there was not.
There should have been a Mancini Impossible.
Yeah. 101 Damnations.
Yes.
Breakfast at Tiffany's, Dinner at 8.
Yes.
Asses to Ashes.
I'm stealing.
Yes.
Love Dominican style.
No.
I mean, yes, you're correct. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah, yep,
the actual title, Divorce Dominican Style.
Ah.
Attack of the Scalpel Woman.
Yes.
Unjaned Melody. Unjaned Melody, sorry. Or Unjaned. I don't
it's
know.
Probably
I don't
know. Unjaned. There was probably a character unjaned. Named Jane.
Okay, Unjaned Melody.
I'm going to say no.
There was an episode called Unjaned Melody. I am sorry.
So boring, I forgot it.
Still so close, you guys. Omar has 8, Sarah has 9, I have 10.
All right. Round 5. Tara, you're not looking at these, sorry.
No.
Okay. Just saying.
No, I'm looking at the thing. It's going so fast, I got to keep score.
Very good.
I can't see anything anyway.
That's why we call you Honest Ariana.
Yes.
Round 5.
Yes.
Is this a theme used for an episode of American Idol?
Okay.
Songs from California.
Yes.
Country rock.
Yes.
Neil Sedaka.
Sedaka? No.
Sedaka?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You say no?
She says no.
It was.
God.
Jesus.
ABBA.
ABBA? Yes. No!
Prince.
Really?
No. Mm.
Songs that inspire Gwen Stefani. Wow. Sorry, that was for Sarah, right?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
No.
You're saying no?
I'm saying no.
It was.
That must have been Cree the voice, I guess.
I'll say.
Grand Old Opry.
Yes.
1950s.
Yes.
Power ballads.
Yes.
What?
What the fuck?
That's insane. All right. Still very close. Sarah has 9. Omar has 11. I have 12.
All right. That was round 5. Here's round 6.
Okay.
Is this the nickname of a character from any of the Degrassi shows?
Okay. Good luck, Omar. Lord.
Wheels.
Yes.
Clutch.
No.
Screech.
Wait, is Clutch one?
Clutch is not one.
Then he said no, so that's correct. No.
I mean, Clutch is one. He got
Clutch
it wrong.
Is one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Sarah.
I'm sorry.
Screech.
Screech, no.
Tiny.
Wait, is there a Screech on
No.
Then she got it right.
Yes, I know.
God. Well, the reason I'm stopping you is so I can keep score.
I know, I'm angry
Stop
at
myself. Stop snapping
I'm
at
angry
me.
Angry at myself.
Do we still sound like brother and sisters? Okay,
what
was mine? What was my next one?
Yours
After
go
Screech?
To, go to hell.
No.
Tiny.
Tiny.
Tiny. No.
There was.
Okay.
Zig.
Yes.
There was. Rainbow.
Rainbow. No.
There was. Bronco.
Bronco? No.
There was. Chewy.
No.
There was.
Damn it.
Blue.
Blue? No.
There was. There's only one wrong answer there. There's only one
and
false answer.
Screech.
And it was Screech. Yeah.
Damn it.
Fuck me. All right. Sarah has 9. Omar has 12. I have 13.
I think I have 10, don't I?
You do? Okay.
Oh,
yes, Screech. You do. Because you got Screech right. Sorry. Sarah has 10. Omar has 12. I have 13.
I'll take responsibility for that one.
Yeah.
Round 7.
I'm listening.
Dick.
Round 7.
Yep.
Is this a celebrity, and that's in quotes,
yep,
who has competed on the UK show Celebrity Big Brother?
Oh, God.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
Tough one.
Oh, man. Okay.
All right.
Leslie Jordan. Yes.
Mark Paul Gossler.
Gossler.
Okay.
Yes.
He has not. Victoria Jackson.
No.
Seems like she would, though.
Tila Tequila. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh!
She has not. Courtney Miss Doug Hutchinson Stodden.
Oh, yeah. Her.
Yes.
Sorry.
Thank you.
I just meant I was recognizing her. I didn't know if she was on it or not. But oh, yay.
Jackie Stallone.
Is this one for me?
Yep.
Yes.
Seems likely. Yes.
Nice.
Ivana Trump.
Whore.
Ivana, no.
Yes.
What? Wow.
The Situation.
Yes.
Stephanie Beecham.
Who?
Beecham?
No.
Yes. Latoya Jackson.
Yes.
Tito Jackson.
No.
correct. He was not. Jermaine Jackson.
No.
Jeremy Jackson.
Jeremy Jackson, no.
He was. Tracy Bingham.
Yes.
Pamela Anderson.
Yes.
Wow.
With the note, cameo on civilian version and several other Big Brothers, but never as a player.
Stephanie Beecham is Dylan's mom from Beverly Hills, 90210.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, right. Look, if you introduce these strict rules, Tara, I only want you to follow them for everybody.
Fine. All right. Sarah has 12 points. I have 15 points. Omar has 16 points.
All right. Yay. And this is round
Thanks,
8.
UK.
Nicely done so far, Omar. Mm-hmm. Thanks, UK. That was a good round for you. Is this a person who has starred on The Simpsons? Justin Bieber.
Yes.
Serena Williams.
Yes.
Brad Pitt.
No.
Correct, he has not. He's been on King of the Hill. Anderson Cooper.
Yes.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes.
Marissa Tomei.
Yes.
Mary Tyler Moore.
No.
Correct. Ed Asner, Valerie Harper, Betty White, Cloris Leachman all have. She hasn't.
Good grief.
She's the holdout.
Wow.
She's so stuck up. Or maybe she realized the show sucks now. Okay. Bob Newhart.
Yes.
Joan Rivers.
Yes.
Perfect round, guys.
Nice.
Round. Hey.
Okay. Sarah has 15. I have 18. Omar has 19.
Whoa.
Still so close.
All right. Round 9. Is this the name of a survivor tribe?
Oh, no.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay.
Espada.
Yes.
Magi.
Yes.
There was a Moto Magi, a Moto, but no Magi. Trick one.
Bullshit.
Yasha.
Yasha? Nosha.
It was.
Wow.
Sabang.
Yes.
Alinta.
Yes, Alinta.
By the way, I'm sure I'm butchering all of these.
They're all stupid, so who cares?
Kadena.
Kadena? No.
I was just reading the notes. Is this the name of the survivor tribe? This one is from the Australian version. US version never specified in question. Varos.
Varos. Yes?
Is it Varos from Game of Thrones?
I don't know. That's Varys from Game of Thrones.
Oh, right. Iger.
Sorry?
Iger.
Yes.
Kota.
Yes.
The Viveros. Viveros. V-I-V-E-R-O-S.
Yes.
Lasted one episode, this tribe, apparently.
Is it like Verizon Fios?
Yes. Zuma.
Yes.
Tituna.
Me?
Yeah.
Tituna. No.
Yes.
Oh, thank God that's over.
Okay, Sarah's got 16. I have 20. Omar's got 21.
All right. Now, I want to say, just so everybody knows, as we're explaining certain things as we go along.
Sure.
This is a user-submitted episode. They have no idea who's going to be on, when I'm going to pick it. I just picked them at random, sort of. I just kind of go through my list.
Sure.
So with that in mind, round 10. Is this the title of an episode of Smallville? Now, Omar, back in the television without pity days.
But you know what? I've blocked so much of that out.
That's the question. How good is Omar's memory from his recapping Smallville days?
Or mine from my editing Smallville recap days.
And watch Sarah win the round.
All right, let's
ready?
Not do that because it won't happen.
Ready. Yes.
Delete.
Yes.
Talisman.
Yes.
Zephyr.
Yes.
Wow, that really seems like it would be.
Progeny.
Like it.
Progeny, yes.
Scorch.
Yes.
What?
Oh.
Crack.
Crack?
Crack.
Yes.
What?
Frozen.
Yes.
Oracle.
Yes.
Echo. Echo. Yes. Echo. Echo.
Echo. Okay, Sarah's got 17. I have 22. Omar's got 23.
All right. Still
there was no scorch, but I'm pretty sure there was a burn.
Yeah.
Round 11, guys.
Yep.
Is this a, wow? Is this a lyric from a Eurovision Song Contest entry?
What? Oh, God damn it!
Awesome.
Well,
we've hit overload, about to explode.
Sure.
Ew.
That's from Azerbaijan in 2012.
Well, that sounds right.
No more questions, no more lies, no farewells, no goodbyes.
Yes.
Netherlands, 2000. Oh, your breasts are like swallows a nesting.
Enough about Sarah's boobs, Dave. What's her clue?
I mean, it has to be real, right? Because how could it not be? Because the truth is stranger than fiction. But just in case, I'm going to say, well, you know what? Yes, that was a lyric. Oh, phew.
Sweden, 1973.
Sweden! Oh, you pervert. Sweden.
73, back when you can say a nesting. You hear... You hear me drowning everything. Just hear me. My loving heart can sing.
No.
Correct. Someone to hold me when things get rough. I need a love that's big enough.
Oh, no.
That's what you said.
That was. Oh. That was the UK from 2003.
That was the UK? That was from an English-speaking country?
Someone to hold me when things get rough. I need a love that's big enough.
Gross.
Ew.
Bob's your uncle. And your cock. All right. Pull me, baby. I'm your trigger. You know my love is bigger. Pull me, baby. I'm your trigger. You know my love is bigger.
Yes.
Oh, Israel, 2015.
Oh, ew. Israel.
Come on, guys.
Okay.
My love is wider than the ocean can be, and is deeper than the deep blue sea.
Ew, no.
Yes.
I assumed it was a trick question.
Germany, 2006.
Germany. Oh,
well, Hasselhoff, what do they know?
Yeah.
I can't conceal it. Don't you see? Can't you feel it? I can't conceal it. Don't you see? Can't you feel it?
Yes.
That is from I Do, I Do, I Do, I Do by ABBA, who won the contest with Waterloo.
All right.
Wait, it was a yes?
Yeah.
No. That's the lyrics from a different ABBA song that not on.
Right.
That's one of the trick questions.
Gotcha.
You can brush my hair, undress me everywhere.
For Christ's sake. I'm not even sure it's legal to, like, hear these lyrics. I'm going to say no.
That was from Barbie Girl.
Yeah, I know that song.
Real song, not a Eurovision.
But
yeah, that's
it was part of an interval act, not an entry.
Oh,
it was on the show, but not as the question was phrased. Are you ready for a little chat and song about the internet?
Yes.
San Marino, 2012.
Okay.
What?
I searched the information board and it read Terminal 3 flights on time.
Yes.
Gotta be.
Ireland, 84. A special kind of madness together through the years.
No.
Correct. Nice. That was from the Hogan Family theme. Valère, Conterre,
Yes.
Yes, Italy, 1958.
God.
Jesus Christ, how long has this show been on?
A long time.
Too long.
You are like a sunset behind a mountain somewhere.
Somewhere.
How noncommittal.
He said yes.
I have to say yes.
Norway, 2010. Lastly, la 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 la.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Nope. I mean...
No.
Yes. Spain in 68.
Fucking Spain.
Shut up, Spain.
Okay, Sarah has 21. Omar and I are tied with 26 each.
Oh, my goodness. Whoa. All right.
Yep.
Round 12.
Are these titles of Walking Dead episodes?
Is this a past question category on Jeopardy? Now, this is good.
Yep.
This is good for you two, yep. for Tara anyways, for having lost a game time recently on Jeopardy question. Mm-hmm. The Hulk, comma, Shakespeare scholar.
Yes.
Historical Facebook entries?
Yes.
Pantless TV. Pantsless TV.
Pantsless TV.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
What?
Zig or zag?
No.
Correct, it was not.
Nice.
Alex meets Auto-Tune.
No.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yikes. Belgium. Belgium. Yeah, just Belgium.
No.
Correct, it was not. The Book of Mormons.
Yes.
Side effects may include... dot, dot, dot.
No.
Yes.
Oh.
Stop it, you're killing me.
This is for me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Correct.
Oh, boy.
That was round 12.
Ooh. Okay, Sarah has 23, Omar has 27, I have 29.
All right, 2 points. It's doable.
This is our last round?
This is our last round.
Dun, dun, dun.
Good luck, Omar.
Round 13. Boy. Is this an alien race or planet from Doctor Who?
Oh, no.
Omar.
Okay, well,
it's on game time.
Listen, at least we're all evenly matched. Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
Equally ignorant.
Yes, that's my point.
For Tara, starting us off.
Okay.
Star whale.
No.
Yes.
Shut up, star whale.
A Camerarian.
Yes.
No, that was from Star Trek, Next Generation. Duravin.
Duravin?
Yeah.
Sure, yes.
Nice.
Blorgon.
Blorgon?
Blorgon.
Yes?
That's from Community's parody. Was it Inspector Space Time?
Right.
Yeah.
Sklaro.
Yes.
Woman Wept.
Yes.
Delvian.
Yes.
That's from Farscape.
Okay.
Okay, can I just get a score right now?
Yeah, Sarah has 25.
Omar's one behind you, right?
Yeah, Omar has 28, I have 29.
Okay, Omar, I'm going to say this really slow because it's long. Rax Acoriophalapatorus. Apatorius. Rax Acor...
Thank you for sparing Dave having to say that again.
Thank you. And for Sarah, for the last one, Clom.
Clom?
Yeah, with a C, you know, because that probably makes a difference.
Nope. Well,
yes, it was.
Shut up, Doctor Who.
Oh, boy. Well, Sarah has 25. Omar and I are tied with 29 each.
All right. I reserved one of the rounds for a tiebreaker.
Oh, shit.
Oh, boy.
So we don't end up with a tie at the end of this. This is how it's going to work.
Okay.
We're going to answer them in pairs.
Okay.
As soon as somebody's ahead, they win.
Okay.
And if at the end of this round, it's still a tie, you both get the point. But you can't engineer a tie, guys. Don't do that. That's a jerk move.
Okay.
No throwing it away. No saying Benson for everything.
Okay.
Okay.
Round 14, the tiebreaker.
This is just me and Omar?
Just me and,
Okay.
No, just me and Omar, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Sarah, take a break.
Doing it.
Is this the title of a real TV show?
Okay.
All right. Mr. and Mrs. Murder.
No.
All right, that means, Omar, if you get this correct, you win. Grandpa Goes to Washington.
Yes.
And that's it.
Hey!
All right, let's play the rest of the round.
Sure.
Sarah, you're back in.
This is just for funsies.
This is for Sarah.
Okay.
Good news, bad news.
Yes.
You would think, but no.
Yeah, you would.
Todd and the Book of Pure Evil.
Yes.
Yeah, I recognize that one. Agatha Raisin and the Quiche of Death.
No.
I mean, yes, you're right. That was a TV movie, not a television show. So it was false, and you said no, so that is a Dave point. Everybody's getting Dave points for these ones.
Okay.
So keep track of your Dave points.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Does someone have to go? This is Sarah's.
Yes.
You are correct. Virtual murder, Tara.
Yes.
Girls who like boys who like boys.
Yes.
The Julie Andrews Hour.
Yes.
Life and Stuff.
No.
I mean, yes, you're correct. And why? Do you know why?
Why?
I mean, what that was? That was something. That was the working title for Roseanne.
Oh. Yeah. Okay.
Halfway Across the Galaxy and Turn Left.
Yes.
Drop the Dead Donkey.
No.
Yes. Who the Bleep Did I Marry?
Yes.
Vanilla Ice Goes Amish?
Yes.
Perfect Score.
Perfect Score? Yes.
Correct. All right, congratulations on all your Dave points, and congratulations, Omar.
Valued guest.
That was tense. That was good.
Wow. That was a great game. That was so
good
fun.
Game.
Yeah. My first game
good
time
job,
victory.
Omar.
Oh.
Omar, where can people find you on the internet if they want to learn more about you?
I'm Omar G on Twitter, and I co-host a Austin-centric podcast called Statesman Shots with my friend Tali Mosley. So check that out at statesman.com/shots.
And on
previously.tv, of course.
All your zombie needs are met by Omar on our site. All right, so what's happening on the site, guys?
Well, as Sarah mentioned earlier, she's starting a Project Greenlight rewatch. So that's still going on in addition to our previously existing Marathon Diaries, which Sarah's also doing on In Search Of, very Mayan-ly. And a past guest of the show, Kim Reed, has been doing a Marathon Diary on The Good Wife all summer, which has been great. And you can find me and Sarah every week, twice a week, on Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210.
There's a comma in there.
Edition.
Thank you.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, both at Tara Ariano. Sarah.
I am on Twitter in various places, including at Revolting Snacks for all your peep reviewing needs, at Tomato Nation, which is my main account, and the True Crime account, at The Dash Blotter.
I am David T. Cole. You can find me at Glark on pretty much everything. All right, everybody. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We bit into the zombie prequel series Fear of the Walking Dead, found out about the latest episode of Face Off from Liv, and discovered why we are all Domer before going around the dial with stops at
Documentary Now.
Thank you. Why? With Hannibal Buress. Project Greenlight, and Cloud City, the worst gift ever. Natalie provided the counterpoint for why Gene is not the Pierce of Bob's Burgers, like mean old Dave says. And Sarah successfully convinced us about her crazy theory that the X-Files Unnatural belongs in the Extra Hot Great Canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Omar, playing on behalf of value guests, was the winner of this week's Is This Anything Game Time.
Woo.
Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Kombucha,
Sarah D. Bunting,
Safe,
and Omar Kayaga.
Hey, zombie, got any heroin?
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
Look, I gave you some wood. I asked you for a cabinet. Build me a cathedral. I don't want a cathedral. I like where I live. I just want a place to put my TV.